are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, April 9th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is a five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the UN meets to discuss chemical attack in Syria, and Israel reportedly bombs a Syrian airbase. It's John Bolton's first day on the job, folks. North Korea announces it will discuss denuclearization. Like I say, Bolton in and the top National Security Council spokesman out. Meanwhile, Jeremy Corbyn calls for UK review of Israel arms sales over recent Gaza killings. U.S. politicians virtually silent. In Oklahoma, teachers on day six of a walkout over learning conditions. And how is Scott Pruitt still head of the EPA? Your friendly reminder, ICE is a terror group. And now, definitively, ineffective policy. Wisconsin Supreme Court Democratic win has Scott Walker on a vision quest. And lastly, Andrew Cuomo, very happily for me, is worried. All this and more, ladies and gentlemen, on today's program. Yes, we are back from our vacation. Everyone is presumably well-rested. One can only imagine. With this crew, what took place over vacation. This week, just to get a little house cleaning done, I will be in the last couple of days of the week in Las Vegas at the Mass Torts Conference that I go to twice a year. And many people tell me, and I'm always worried when I go, because I don't know who I'm going to interview. I don't know who's going to be there. I'm not even sure what the major topics of discussion will be. I believe the opioid lawsuits have progressed, and I will probably run into attorneys who are working on those, suing not the manufacturers, and we spoke to a couple of people. I think there are probably suits against the manufacturers. And certainly we talked about the protests that took place just there in New York at the Metropolitan Museum, where Nan Golden, was it, the photographer, was leading a protest where people threw their pills or their prescription bottles into the moat in the Egyptian room at the Metropolitan Museum, which was donated or underwritten by the family, and I can't, their name,
Sackler,
the Sackler family.
The prescription bottles were special. They had these special labels on them that said something like prescribed by the Sackler family.
Sackler family, of course, are the ones who developed and manufactured OxyContin. And these lawsuits are with are against the distributors because they have a statutory obligation. Go back and listen to the interviews we did last October. And I presume we will hopefully try and run down one or two of those attorneys and get an update on what's going on. And then there are other lawsuits. Remington, horrible story about the Remington rifle, one of the most, I can't remember which model it was, but the most popular rifle in the country, which was found to fire by itself.
That was an incredible story.
And but just there's a lot of stories like that, and we'll be talking to attorneys there at in Las Vegas, and I think maybe Tom Hartman may be there. Jenk is sometimes there.
All my friends.
We'll see. Exactly.
I'm back from vacation.
And that's it. That's it for the house cleaning. We're going to cover some of the stuff that we missed last week. One story that that took place, I guess it must have been last week, maybe around April 3rd, maybe? Yeah, that would have been last week. There was, and you know that Scott Walker in Wisconsin has now been admonished by at least two federal courts to hold a special election, which he refuses to hold because it could change the balance of power in the Wisconsin State Senate. Last week, a Milwaukee County Circuit Judge, Rebecca Dallet, I believe is how her name is pronounced, won a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which is rather shocking. Remember, following the 2011 protests in Madison, massive protests against Scott Walker and his move to cut health care and to basically destroy public sector unions in that state, there were elections for the state Supreme Court which would go on to rule on a couple of the ways in which those laws were passed. And Democrats could not pick up a seat on that court. It is the first time in 23 years that a left-of-center candidate has won an open Supreme Court seat in the state. And she won by nearly 12 percentage points. Conservatives still controlled that court. Their advantage has gone from 5-2 to 4-3. There was even outside spending. No one was had an outsized amount of dollar support. And so Scott Walker is nervous. So nervous that he's pulling an Andrew Cuomo and coming out and pretending he's supporting policies that are to the left of him. Here is Scott Walker's announcement, if you can handle this, honestly. I wonder how this faux sincerity goes over. But understand, Scott Walker is putting this out to people who don't know, with all due respect, an eighth of what you know about policy. Half of what he's proposing, three-quarters of what he's proposing, is simply Obamacare. But listen to this.
Providing stability in healthcare is a major part of our ambitious agenda for 2018. To provide comfort and stability, I propose enacting a law that will guarantee coverage of pre-existing conditions so that someone who has cancer or another serious disease or ailment will not have to worry about obtaining coverage or keeping that coverage.
Pause it. Well, federal law in this country makes it impossible to deny someone coverage because of pre-existing conditions. That is what is known as Obamacare. So that initiative should be pretty easy to implement. It just basically involves telling your state regulators, you know that federal law that you've been complying with? Continue to comply with that law. Let's go on.
Retirees, I propose that we make senior care a permanent program provided by the state. For the small number
Pause
of people.
It. So this senior care, how are they going to make this a permanent program provided by the state? They basically are just going to take the federal dollars, I guess, presumably from Medicare, which provides for health insurance for seniors. We're going to change the name, probably come up with a new logo, see if we can get a waiver from Donald Trump's Health and Human Services.
The Badger Care?
Exactly. Well, Badger Care is what he rolled back in 2011. Maybe he's bringing some of that back. See, I could take away, but I can also give back.
For the small number of people who seek coverage through the individual market, not through their employer or through Medicare, but on the individual market, I propose that the state provide assistance to keep those premiums from making health care coverage unreachable for our fellow citizens. Under Obamacare, the so-called Affordable Care Act, premiums for people in this individual market are going up a whopping average of 36%.
Pause it. Now, understand that the state has the full ability right now to A, tell their insurance providers you can't raise your rates that much, and B, to provide subsidies on their own. There's nothing about Obamacare that is prohibiting Scott Walker from taking these measures prior to now.
Average of 36%. Some will see larger premium increases. For example, a 21-year-old living in Brown County could be facing increases as high as 105%.
Pause it. Now, a 21-year-old in any county in the country is eligible to be on their parents' health insurance program until they're 26 because of Obamacare. And I got news for you. That 21-year-old, the reason why it's going to be 105%, because that 21-year-old may not be buying health insurance.
You're one of the Obamacare plans. This is unsustainable and unacceptable. Today, I propose a health care stability act that will keep premiums at a reasonable level right here in Wisconsin. This is a market-driven approach to bring stability to healthcare in Wisconsin.
Pause it. You know, there's another market-driven approach to bring stability to healthcare, and that is called Obamacare. To the extent that Obamacare is not working, it's because it's a market-driven approach to bring stability to healthcare. But if you want to try that again, be my guest.
To healthcare in Wisconsin. You see, we will lead while Washington fails to get the job done. It will provide stability and peace of mind for our citizens. These reforms will help us move Wisconsin forward.
Is there a more despicable human being, disingenuous, incredible liar, who tries to do so with more false sincerity? I mean,
I can think of some contenders, he's up there.
The only thing I can give him credit for is for not wearing a sweater, but by wearing it like a sweatshirt
like
with a
fleece?
V-neck, with the fleece, with
you
the
like
zipper.
The, yeah.
Because he knows if he wore the sweater, that would be just too much. So the fleece is what's really going to sell it. That's what he told his people.
I just want to whisper in all these people's ears like, hey, you know what would really own the libs? Single-payer health care.
I swear to God that 6 or 7 years ago, I would hear these ads on right-wing talk radio for the True Obama documentary. And me and Tom Sharpling were talking about putting out a documentary about Obama that leads with, and we will never give us the single-payer health care that we should all demand. See if that we could just
exactly
get
right.
Conservatives to
That's
pay.
That's what I've always said.
You gotta speak on their wavelength.
You gotta speak on their wavelength.
Call it something great, like awesome America individualist care, but it would actually be
right.
Just like really good healthcare.
Patriot care.
Yeah, just patriot care. That's simple.
Folks.
Cuck-free care.
As you know, I am... I think I'm fully recovered, although my voice is still a little bit messed up, I think, from that pneumonia situation. My God, if there's anybody in this office.
I know, I love it.
Who should not be giving me.
Actually, excuse me. Wait, hold on.
I got a headache.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got to
well,
step out,
listen,
guys. I don't feel too
right,
well.
Exactly.
I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
This is actually good for you, but it was very important to me to be as hydrated as possible. That's what everybody kept telling
me. Important.
And fortunately, the liquid IV packets that we got came just in time. Liquid IV is a non-GMO electrolyte drink mix. It's vegan, free of gluten, dairy, and soy. It provides the same hydration as drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water faster and more effectively than water alone. It contains 5 essential vitamins, including more vitamin C than an orange and as much potassium as a banana. Liquid 4, or IV, I should say, donates one serving to people in need for every order placed. I'm going to take it. I'm traveling to Vegas. I'm going to take it for jet lag. Sometimes I get dehydrated in the skies. I get very dry.
Excuse me, stewardess. Oh, I'm sorry, flight attendant.
No, I just bring, pour a packet in your bottle. In your bottle. Also, I'm bringing some to Vegas because occasionally I overindulge with the drinking. Now, speaking of which, Michael, this would be a wonderful opportunity for you to see if we could actually do a test if your rate of attendance on the show goes up. If you had this to drink at home.
Mm.
Well, sometimes you go out, you take
I wake
up in the morning, you're like, I've got a headache.
Well, the thing is that usually I feel fine.
It's called a hangover. Right.
Well, I can't repeat that. You text
this stuff does not have crappy sweeteners in it. It's straight sugar, electrolytes, like I say, vitamin C, potassium. Right now, my listeners get 20% off of liquidiv.com when you use my code MAJORITY at checkout. It's liquid-IV. That's 20% off anything you order on Liquid IV's website. Go to liquid-IV.com. Enter my promo code MAJORITY. Get your savings and start getting better hydration. That's liquid-IV.com. Promo code MAJORITY. Don't wait. Get hydrated today. Meanwhile, whenever I go somewhere where I'm not getting subsidized to go, in terms of like someone paying for my hotel room or something like that, I like to go and stay in people's houses. It's better.
It is better.
You get to, because I'm not going to go out to eat every night. I'm not going to eat for every single meal. You get a kitchen, you get more privacy, you get more space. You can have everybody staying together. Some places even have hot tubs. It's not a bad, hot tub. All the comforts of home and then some. Tripping.com, one search lets you compare every home from the world's top vacation rental sites in one place. Find the best deal on your perfect vacation rental. Best of all, at Tripping.com, you can join millions of travelers who find more savings with rates up to 80% less than traditional hotel rooms. I don't know why people do hotels anymore.
It's mystifying.
This year, save time and money when you book the vacation home of your dreams with Tripping.com/majority. That's Tripping, TRIPPING.com/majority. Find your perfect vacation rental. Tripping.com/majority. You don't have to visit a bunch of different sites, folks. Tripping.com/majority. Check it out. All right, let's get into, we're back to where we were. I guess it was a year ago almost. Was it a year ago that we bombed Syria in response to a chemical attack? Now, look.
Yeah, just shy, I think.
For those people who insist that this is some type of false flag operation, where the crew of white helmets are crisis actors who go in and fake all of these chemical attacks.
Yeah, it's an interesting hybrid. Their white helmets are a mix of crisis actors and ISIS assets. So it's a pretty interesting breakdown.
Can't spell crisis without ISIS.
That's true, actually.
Think about it.
Understand that the white helmets would have also had to infiltrate the UN, which has put out lengthy reports on the use of chemical weapons in Syria. Juan Cole has a good piece as to why the Syrian regime may have used chemical attacks on Douma. Douma was at the time of the chemical attack, a holdout enclave. There were reports as of last Saturday, that the Army of Islam had agreed to an evacuation. However, negotiations had subsequently broken down. It is now reported, as of yesterday, that Syria and Russia reached an evacuation deal with the Jaish al-Islam rebels, Army of Islam. Military operations have been halted. Under the deal, 100 buses are said to be moving 8,000 fighters and 40,000 of their relatives out of the town. Hostages held by the rebels are being set free. The development means pro-government forces have now taken full control of the eastern Ghouta, which I guess is that region. So in terms of why the Syrian regime might use chemical weapons, this seems to have been possibly explained by the fact that it was, you know, the last nudge that the Army of Islam needed to exit Douma. With all this said, it does not necessarily follow that we should be bombing Syria or that we should maintain any type of military operations there. It's incumbent upon anybody who suggests this that they actually have some sense of what outcome they're looking for. And how it's supposed to be effective, bombing Syria. The only thing that we are doing in terms of Syria at this point, far as I can tell, is we have now frozen $200 million that were part of a promised reconstruction recovery fund to the UN. That was supposed to be paid over the weekend. A humanitarian official, Jan Egeland, who serves as an advisor to the UN in Syria, told reporters that in the first quarter of this year, only 7.7% of the required funding for humanitarian operations have been received. White House is freezing $200 million in funds that were supposed to support recovery and reconstruction of areas liberated from ISIS. You know, so that it's not a crap box there and ISIS returns. One of those areas is Raqqa. That was the former de facto capital of ISIS. About a week ago, 25 UN humanitarian experts submitted the UN's first comprehensive needs assessment for the town of Raqqa. It is a city of 100,000 people with virtually no public services, just destroyed. So if people are genuinely concerned about helping the Syrian people, the first thing you should do is accept more refugees. The second thing you should do is protest for funds to get to Syria to help Syrians.
And we also, I will add, we should keep a U.S. military presence in Rojava for now so that the Kurds don't fall like they did in Afrin. And you can also connect this because, I mean, you know, this is fast moving, but basically like the Russians and the Turks had a deal about actually letting out some of these fighters from Ghouta and letting them come back, because I think like basically Erdogan wants to use groups like that to repopulate those areas, like with Afrin, which it's funny. The Turkish caller that called me a week or two ago when I was hosting and said, you know, that people are using the word genocide to describe what's happening there. And I said, it's certainly incredible abuses and humanitarian, but I don't use that word. It's now been put on a genocide watch list because Erdogan is talking about repopulating that area and using completely baseless numbers at the population center there, implying that he wants to basically migrate back refugees from Syria and take these groups from Ghouta to pretty much like cleanse Kurds out of that area. The thing that broke down is that Turkey went into the Kurdish areas, into Afrin, and then basically Russia and Syria screwed him on the deal and decided to bomb these groups in rebel-held areas anyways. So there's like this whole other sort of
yes.
dynamic involving Kurdistan with this as well.
But in terms of the issue of
what
of
we can
bombing
do,
Syria,
don't bomb Syria. Right. Everything you're saying is totally right. There's no. It's weird. That's another thing that's very weird about like people who insist on like defending Assad and having these weird narratives about it. There actually isn't much of an. I mean, I will have an argument about U.S. troops with regards, not troops, but U.S. presence specifically with regards to Rojava and the Kurds. But in general, like we all agree. I'm just saying you don't need to lie and have a conspiracy theory to get to the
exactly.
same policy. I don't
exactly.
want to bomb Syria. Yeah.
Exactly. You can hold both these two thoughts in your head. That one, Assad dropped a barrel of chlorine as a way of saying, like, you get out now. Here's my closing offer. You can both believe that and also believe that we should not be bombing Syria with no idea as to what, no theory as to what we want as an outcome. I mean, the last time we went through this, I sat on a panel at MSNBC. By chance, I was there, I think, to talk about Bannon and Kushner. And we got word at the 8 p.m. show that the bombing of Syria was imminent within an hour. I was the only person on MSNBC, I think, until midnight, who was saying, how could we possibly bomb Syria? Almost to a person. Each person said, we're going to do it. And then we have to come up with a plan as to what to do next. And I'm just like, what? You're going to have Donald Trump, who you don't trust to tie his shoes? You're going to have him bombing, and then he's supposedly going to... come up with a plan to deal with Syria? Well, the generals.
Checks in the mail.
Right. The generals, i.e., who was it now? McMaster?
McMaster gone.
Mattis
is a
lunatic.
Was a total lunatic who committed atrocities in Iraq.
Oh, John Kelly.
Yeah, Jode. I could help Turkey with some of their border issues,
exactly.
Yeah, I think you just hit on the outcome that the Trump administration wants.
Which is what?
Which is more support from Americans and support from the media. Like the last time Trump got a bunch of positive press coverage was the time you're describing
right
now.
Was it a year ago from now where Fareed Zakaria said he's finally become president?
Today has become
a
president.
Like, give me a break.
But I do want to just maintain that specifically with regards to those Kurdish areas, the backing that we have given them should absolutely continue. And actually, Murray Bookchin's daughter... Actually, that is part of her solidarity work, is actually agitating to keep that, you know, logistical and military support for those regions. And
well,
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%.
A moral obligation. I mean, it's not like we haven't screwed up. It's a different group of people.
Yeah, it's a moral obligation. And by the way, if you even care, you know, beyond rhetorically about ISIS to any extent, or even the idea of like maybe Kurdish areas could be a place where refugees could go and have some minimal standards of not being in a totally abusive environment. So, you know, that's real. All this other stuff is nonsense.
Meanwhile, it's being reported that Israel carried out an attack on a Syrian air base near Homs on Monday. That would be today. Presumably, according to Israel, said that the air base was being used by troops from Iran, and Israel would not accept such a presence in Syria. It's a nice way, perhaps, for them to, for Israel, to wipe what has gone on in Gaza off the news. Although, you know, to be fair, it's not like it gets really any coverage in this country in any meaningful way. Depending on whose numbers you believe, somewhere between 17 and 50, is it? Have been killed.
Yep.
There's incredible video footage. We're not going to play it. It's sort of disturbing. Of snipers, Israeli snipers, firing on protesters with tires.
I might play
they
some of it tomorrow.
roll roll tires down a hill, and they've killed at least one member of the press, clearly marked as a member of the press. And
clearly shot in a, I mean, if you watch the video, like, marked as a member of the press and not much confusion. Like,
no, he's shot, wearing a huge vest that says press on it.
They shot the guy.
Without a doubt. I mean, there's no doubt of what's going on there.
You know what the Israeli talking point on the tire burning is, though? And I hate to bring some levity to this, but
very dangerous.
No, no. This Palestinians don't care about the environment.
It's not really.
I'm not kidding. It's very bad for air pollution. So this is who you support? I thought we were trying to protect the clean air. We have gays with roller skates and we don't burn tires, so we should have apartheid.
It's unbelievable.
We made ways. Why can't we kill kids?
It's unbelievable. Corbyn in Britain has called for a review of the UK arms sales to Israel.
What an anti-Semite.
It's unbelievable. Vicious, vicious, vicious. The Intercept? No, Splinter News asked every senator about this, and they could not get really any answer. Here is Bernie Sanders going on State of the Union. This is about as good as it gets, and it's not great, frankly.
No.
But this is what the state of American politics is. No one going through the Splinter News looking for, like, he couldn't even get, literally couldn't get comments. Not even like, well.
We don't like to see kids killed, but on the other hand,
it was all basically
Hamas
no. Not even that. It's all just like the senator's traveling at the moment. Okay. I'm sorry, we can't get back to you.
Well, I mean, what can you say?
You know, that's actually progress of a sort.
Right.
I think a couple years ago, they would have just been like, did you see those tires? You know, I went to the Holocaust Museum. Not again.
Right. Here is Bernie Sanders on CNN State of the Union.
Let's stay in that region for 1 second, because I want to turn to the violent clashes in Gaza over the weekend. You tweeted about
this
yesterday.
You know, one thing I heard on, I think it was on the radio. Maybe it was like on one of, it was like a 10-10 wins, or it was, you know, the 3 or 4 minute news brief that they give. And it talked about the shooting of the Palestinians, but it specifically put it in this context. It said, the Palestinians were protesting, and the Israelis fired back. And let me just explain one thing about the English language. If you are firing back at someone, the implication is that someone is firing at you. You cannot fire back at someone protesting unless those protesters are firing at you.
Or unless it was a microaggression, which was also bad for the environment.
So it could,
there's a lot of emotional labor
you
being
could say
protested.
The Palestinians were polluting the air. And in return, the Israelis used snipers to shoot them.
The Jewish people have asthma, and they were trying to do this, as well as making us feel uncomfortable about our identity and our
then
own. Israel is really a safe space.
They started to use blinking lights. GIFs with blinking lights. And he tried to give us all...
They were Eichen walled the whole country, yes. So we needed to kill them.
Here is Bernie Sanders responding to Jake Tapper.
Second, because I want to turn to the violent clashes in Gaza over the weekend. You tweeted about this yesterday. You wrote, quote, the killing of Palestinian demonstrators by Israeli forces in Gaza is tragic. It is the right of all people to protest for a better future without a violent response, unquote. The Israeli government called the protests, quote, violent terror demonstrations. The ambassador of Israel to the United Nations said Hamas fighters were interspersed throughout the crowd using human shields and were killed after making, quote, direct attacks on Israeli positions. Do you not accept the Israeli government's explanation?
No, I don't. I think from what my understanding is you have tens and tens of thousands of people who are engaged in a nonviolent protest. I believe now 15 or 20 people, Palestinians, have been killed, and many, many others have been wounded. So I think it's a difficult situation, but my assessment is that Israel overreacted on that. But again, the bottom line here is that the United States of America has got to be involved in dealing with the terrible tragedy in Gaza. You know, whether it is Syria, whether it's Yemen, whether it is Gaza, we're looking at the need for the international community led by the United States to deal with that situation. Gaza is a disaster right now. Youth unemployment is off the charts, and we're going to continue to see those kinds of demonstrations and protests unless the world community recognizes the problem in Gaza and brings the Israelis and the Palestinians together to start addressing those problems.
So basically, the best we can do in this country with our politicians is Israel overreacted, but the real problem is the United States is not getting in and being a fair broker. Now, it is the case that our ability as a country to even pretend that we're a fair broker has been severely diminished.
I mean, we're simply not. But
well, But I mean, there was certainly for years we could maintain that posture, at least performatively, and that's over. And really, there is no institutional. There is no institutional dissent. There's no institutions out there that really in any way fundamentally dissent from our policy in regards to Israel.
Well, in Israeli politics and Israeli, is actually a forerunner, arguably, of things like Trump in a lot of ways. I mean, it was a Tea Party country, at least starting for, you know, since Netanyahu was brought back into office in 2009. And the same kind of, I mean,
I
it's
guess.
Unique.
I don't know
no,
what
it's
the
a
point
unique
is.
Situation. No, there's a lot of parallels.
You think that American politics have been infected by Israeli politics?
I think there's a ton of parallels, and there's no doubt. And in fact,
well, there may
American politics actually undermined Israeli politics when
of
it was
course.
Ahead of American politics.
Right.
So, and now, and
which
the Israeli
is
hard right, when they were the first, like when you moved to Netanyahu and Naftali Bennett and all these people, and they actually just started in the last couple of terms just being like, why do we even have to pretend anymore? Why don't we just overtly do this? Yes, I think that does reverse
also
back to Trump, and there is a parallel with Republican
well,
modern Republican
I'm sure
politics.
There's a parallel, but I don't think there's any causal connection. I mean, if anything, the fact that the Bush administration pushed for elections even I think before both the Palestinians
so you're talking about
and frankly
the
Israelis, yes, and the Israelis even wanted that, I think was far more problematic. I don't know if
I'm talking about
Israeli
this.
Politics influenced the U.S. politics in the development of the Tea Party.
I think right-wing politics has definitely been it's been influenced internationally by Israeli right-wing politics and modern ethno-politics. But, I mean, we can get into that later. But the other thing that's kind of funny about it, I mean, it's definitely true, but I like how Bernie, like, even when he's talking about Gaza, what really sets him off is youth unemployment.
Right.
He's just like, yeah, you know, they're getting killed. And the unemployment rate is unacceptable. He's always,
oh, well, that's he finds a real
his,
problem.
He finds, his, he finds his circle.
Right.
He finds his just like,
well, it's indicative of the of the situation there. I mean,
well, yeah, obviously
he doesn't have the ability. I mean, however you want to characterize this, but American politicians do not have either the ability or the guts, or however you want to phrase it, to say, "Look, it's an open air prison." And so, yes, unemployment is incredibly high because it's an open air prison.
They also like can't get medicine. They're also like regularly killed by like an occupying power. Like, yeah, there's a chain of worries there. But
it's like a really bad vacation spot.
No.
Where no one is vacationing.
Ramallah is like a really bad vacation spot, I could tell you.
I mean, I think at this point in America, we should encourage anyone who's even willing to say anything critical of
without
Israel.
A doubt without
and
a doubt
maybe hopefully he'll spend some time with Jeremy Corbyn and talk about foreign policy a bit.
No, he's never going to be as far. It's just a different context there, but
it is changing. I mean, look, we saw even in the context of when Netanyahu came to speak I guess now 3 years ago, you had a half a dozen Democratic senators, even our
conservative
our buddy,
ones,
Tim Kaine, didn't show up to hear Netanyahu speak. And in the context of American politics, that's a big deal. I mean, I think we're not too far away before the Democratic Party becomes far less reliable in their complete genuflecting to Israel and the Israeli lobby. So, you know, but I mean, God, it really is shocking to see people continue to try and justify this behavior. I mean, it is just, it's just shocking. It really is shocking.
Funny if Tim Kaine actually was an anti-Semite, like all this other, the smears for everything up, but Tim Kaine's like, I just can't sit with more Jew talk.
Well, the, I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's not.
I just can't take it anymore.
There is no inconsistency between being an anti-Semite and being virulently pro-Israel.
Yeah, I was going to say, the most anti-Semitic people are the most pro-Israel people in the world
today. Yeah, let
me just
finish what I was saying. That there's a lot of been written with the Israeli government making common cause with right-wing fascist groups in Europe. The vast majority of so-called Christian scientists, Christian Zionists in this country, their vision for Jews is, you know, for at least like two-thirds of them to burn in eternal hellfire. Now, maybe that's not anti-Semitism. Maybe that's just like, you know, the way things got to be. But I don't feel too comfortable with that prescription, basically because of the eczema. Eternal hellfire is horrible on my skin.
Man, that is such...
Horrible. Horrible on my skin.
It's like...
Horrible.
The most borscht belt thing I've ever heard you say.
What are you going to do?
That says a lot.
All right. Also, I think when we left, the story out of Oklahoma, and Oklahoma teachers were highly influenced by what happened in West Virginia. The story out of Oklahoma was that the state Senate, the legislature, had rolled back tax cuts on things like alcohol, tobacco, and oil drilling as a way of paying teachers higher salaries. Oklahoma, I don't know if it was number 49 or 50 in terms of what teachers were making. However, though the teachers were granted a pay raise last month, they have they are now into their second week of a walkout because of the state school facilities, the lack of equipment, the lack of textbooks. They need more spending, not just for their salaries, but for actually supporting education more broadly. And here are a couple of clips. This one is, which one is this? Do I have this on the list? Okay, this is a compilation of a bunch of teachers as to why they're out striking. We've got a couple more clips.
Science, and then I also wait tables and bartend.
I'm a high school sports official, Little League coach, and then I have another part-time job as an Uber driver.
You work at the zoo?
48th in the nation for pay.
I head coach two sports. I was an adjunct professor.
I picked up DJing, videography.
I play in the Philharmonic.
Any type of handyman.
Worked at Walgreens and worked at Stein Mart.
I can build a fence. I can make a gate.
I have a teacher that is working at Ross. I saw her there one time. I said, I didn't know you work here. She said, yeah, I just don't get paid enough.
I clean the school. After I finish teaching, I go in and get my janitor cart, change my clothes, and clean the school.
I'm a photographer on the side.
So I've seen teachers, and they work at restaurants because they have a better chance of getting a good retirement in that job than they do being a teacher.
I've dog sat. I sell my own art.
I teach English online to kids in China.
I drive for Uber on the weekends sometimes just to get a little extra cash.
Playing gigs as much as I can.
I actually sell like homemade lip balms and soaps and things like that.
I got $5,000 when I first started and haven't seen a nickel since as far as a raise goes. And I'm supposed to support my family. That ain't right.
I just do anything I can to make ends meet, but I love to teach, and so it's the sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Now, see, that's the thing. You don't want people like that in the teaching business. People who don't have an entrepreneurial, can-do American spirit. Uniquely American. Uniquely American.
So inspiring.
George Bush once, I think it was in a debate or it was some type of town hall.
It was a town
hall. Approached by a woman who said, I am working two or three jobs to take care of my family. He just looked back and goes, hey, uniquely American. With pride. But here is, and that was, those were teachers who were on strike to get better pay. But now they have not stopped with getting better pay. They actually, contrary to what Betsy DeVos would have you believe, that they're not serving the students. They're now actually arguing for stuff for the students. I think, is this a student right here? This is an art student. High school art student. Listen to what kind of supplies this high school art student gets.
So what kinds of things? Is it the size of the classroom, the supplies?
Okay, I'm an art student. We ran out of blue paint 2 months ago. It's really hard being an acrylic art student without blue paint. There's no paper. There aren't pencils. We're out of glue. Class sizes are insane. Last year, I had four classes where I didn't have a chair because my schedule got swapped on the fourth day. And I walked into these classes and they were just like, sit on the floor. So I sat on the floor for a whole year. I still do in some of my classes.
I'm sorry. That's just effed up. I mean, honestly, like,
can do American spirit.
Do you need, doesn't Lawrence O'Donnell have that thing where he gets desks for kids in Africa? He does. He has a charity that he supports. I mean, it's just absurd. It's just absurd. And good for the teachers to go out, and this is not about, obviously, their pay raises. This is about their primary mission, which is teaching students. And they're out there, you know, clearly striking on behalf of their students. Now, here is Russell Westbrook of the Thunder, Oklahoma City Thunder, and showing some solidarity. What is Westbrook? Is he there like a forward?
Point guard.
He's a point guard? Okay.
Yeah, doesn't play like one, though. Average a triple-double.
Triple-double.
No, I mean, I think it's, me personally, I think it's important that, obviously, with teaching, different things going on, and education is very, very important to me. And, you know, the teachers standing up for something that, obviously, they believe in, us helping the kids get a better education. Obviously, them getting paid more funding for the schools is very, very important. So I'm definitely all in for that because I believe education is a key to a lot of different things that's going on in society. So,
I mean, it's just good that you're getting broad-based public support. There was interesting piece during our break by Corey Robin on juxtaposing the support that teacher strikes are getting now, particularly from the center left, as opposed to during the Chicago teacher strikes. Now, I think there was a couple of reasons for that. One being that the so-called education reform movement was a lot stronger 5 years ago, 6 years ago. This is pre the backlash to Arne Duncan's testing. And this was Chicago in particular, obviously highly associated with the Obama administration, Rahm Emanuel, Pritzker, Arne Duncan, obviously from Chicago. And I will also say that, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, the liberal media that he cites, it certainly was not, there was not as much excitement generated by this strike as there should have been, broadly based. With that said, I filled in for Chris Hayes on Up With Chris that weekend and did an extensive panel on it. I think we did an hour on the Chicago teacher strike, maybe 2 hours. So, but it is interesting to see how much people are rallying around this. What's this clip? Is this clip?
This is from one of Jamie's friends.
Okay, so Jamie's friends was down there, and the interesting thing's happening in Chicago was, at least in the past 10 years, the most prominent example of what they call social movement unionism, where the idea is that you're creating solidarity and you're arguing for issues that are broader than the immediate concerns of the union and its members. It is looking at, you can almost think about it as intersectionality, as across issue sets. Now, teachers are obviously very well situated for this because they have close relationships with their clients, their students, and their students' parents. And there are so many different issues that go into educating a child. If a child is not getting proper nutrition, nourishment at home, there's going to be a problem in school. If there are social services, living in poverty in and of itself is a far greater indicator as to how a child is going to do in school than anything else. I've had multiple education experts over the years come on this program and say, tell me the area code, or I should say the zip code of where the child lives, and I will tell you what their education is going to be like and what educational achievement they will have. There is no better indicator than what their income of their family is. And so teachers are very well situated from this. And so we saw this in Chicago, and there was huge support in the community for teachers, which was also something relatively new. Because very often, after a certain period of time, people get a little exasperated. What am I going to do with my kids? They're not going to school. We saw this type of social movement, unionism, in Massachusetts. Barbara Maldione, a big proponent of that, won the teachers union. We had her on this program, I guess, a couple of years ago now. Maybe it was 4 years ago. People should check out that interview. But here is some footage that Jamie, what's your friend's name? Or do you...
Oh, Tatiana Casarelli at Left Voice. She's been doing some really good reporting on the strike in Oklahoma.
And what in this clip, what, there's some construction workers? Is that right?
No,
is that a different one?
There, we have that one too. We have, this one is of some students actually protesting for their teachers.
What's this? All right, so we got some students protesting, and do we have that footage as well? And here's a clip of, and this is what's I think really encouraging, is to watch solidarity across professions, across jobs. These are construction workers who are walking off the job in support of teachers. This is where stuff starts getting real.
Are they Teamsters? Yeah.
When you start to see you know.
One guy's got a box of pizza. Looks like he's bringing it somewhere.
Yeah, you can. People are going to get scared if they start seeing more things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I would like to make the point also that these are in right-to-work states. And a lot of these strike actions are being organized from the ground up, from the bottom up. They're not being, they're not as mediated by unions as one might expect. And I think it provides a really inspiring model for how we can have worker struggle even with, like, when a very small percentage of the population is in an official union.
And in you know, sort of the wake of, and we're anticipating this, of what's going to happen with the Janus case, when you essentially effectively get white right to work, a federal right to work, so-called right to work laws.
Is
I mean, that
kind
of the
like,
effect of it.
Is that what we talked about with Jane McAlevey last time she was on the show?
McAlevey came and spoke about that, broadly speaking, in the wake of anticipating the Janus case.
So obviously unions are really important, but, you know, in a way, it also incentivizes compromise and labor peace. And it's always in the union's leadership's best interest to have that. Whereas when it's just a bunch of workers organizing themselves, they're more inclined to be on wildcat.
Well, let's be clear. I mean, these teachers belong to a union. They just don't have the same requirements to support the union as they would in a non-right to work state.
It's not even called a union in right to work states, but it basically is.
Yeah, I don't know semantically if you would call it necessarily union. I mean, you can have a union. It's just a question of whether or not everyone is responsible for paying in any type of agency fees.
I know in West Virginia, it's called like an association or something.
I don't know if I would go as far as saying that all union leadership necessarily is looking to cut a deal and create labor peace. I mean, the flip side of people not being unionized is that, you know, things like Taft-Hartley doesn't apply to them in the same way.
Hey, Matt.
But I don't know if I would go so far as to say this is a positive, but it is, I think, like a lemons
lining.
Out of lemonade.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it'll be really interesting to see
lemonade
just
out of lemons.
Where this goes.
Yeah, they were Teamsters, and that's, I guess, a lead shot there.
Teamsters going in and refusing to cross the picket line to work on renovations on the Capitol. Oh, good for them. All right. Look, we're going to take a break, going to the fun half. Well, you know what? Let's play this story, though, before we go. There's two stories. ICE, apparently over vacation, still exists, and they're still basically a terror organization as far as I'm concerned. And story after story about what's going on with ICE. This is pretty amazing. Understand, right, that arrests are way up. Deportations have not really gone up commensurate with the arrests because there's no way for them to. The system is overloaded. So basically, all you're doing is sticking people in legal limbo. You're making it impossible for them to work. And the idea with these high-profile deportations, you know, deporting people who've been here for 30 years, deporting a doctor, deporting a chemistry teacher. The idea is to strike fear in the hearts of the immigrant community. Got a story here of, despite the fact that Mattis, Secretary of Defense, said that non-citizen troops and veterans will not be deported, ICE deported a 27-year-old Zhuang Zhu, who had enlisted in the Army and was caught in an immigration dragnet involving a fake university set up by ICE to catch brokers of fraudulent student visas. So they set up a fake university in the called University of Northern New Jersey. It's supposed to look like a real school. The idea was to catch people who are selling fraudulent student visas. This guy signed up for this university, went into the army, and now apparently there's a ton of immigrants who are suing the federal government as victims of federal entrapment. But remember now, We're not seeing an increase in deportations necessarily because the system cannot handle it. And if you're one of those people who are under the misguided notion that the self-deportation is a policy that would be effective for your stated goals, which are to get rid of immigrants, the number of border crossings by immigrants without documentation, unlawful border crossings, have gone up in the past 3 or 4 or 5 months, which should be an indication to you, if you are one of these people, that maybe we get immigrants in this country, undocumented immigrants in this country, not because what we're offering is so great, but that what we're offering is so great relative to the places that they are coming from. In other words, this is not a pull situation. It is a push situation. If you are facing potential death because there's so much violence in where you live, you will go to a country that is still even hostile towards immigrants. It's worth it to you. So if we really, really want to deal with the idea of people unlawfully crossing our border, then the idea would be to begin to figure out ways of making a life south of the border a little bit easier on people. But here is an example of one of those attempts to basically send a message and terrorize the immigrant community. A New Jersey woman who has lived in the United States for 20 years, was deported to Bangladesh. This was about 2 weeks ago, on the night of her daughter's prom.
All new at 6, an NBC 10 exclusive, a mother weeping hours before she will be torn away from her children. The undocumented mom who lives in South Jersey will be forced to leave the country tonight. All she wants to do is stay.
Stay with my kid.
The mother is being deported. When she reported for her routine immigration check, she was told she had to leave the country.
NBC 10's Miguel Martinez-Vai talks exclusively with a family that will be just ripped apart tonight.
But I should have stayed home because that's messed up. It's just school is really stressful sometimes. And then this, too, is like stressful.
After school, Shajida Sikander sits in the kitchen with her mother, Selena. A place the pair have spent countless hours together, working on homework, talking about the stresses of life. They've been here before, but after tonight, they may never be here together again.
I don't really know when I'm going to see her next.
Tonight, Selena will be deported. After 20 years of chasing the American dream with her family, she'll leave them and their New Jersey home behind with a one-way ticket back to Bangladesh.
They kind of told her if she doesn't buy her own ticket, they're just going to put her in the cell, and then she's going to be sent off. So obviously, it's my mom, never going to make her go through that.
Her husband, their father, was deported in November. She was given a 6-month reprieve, but tells me her request to hold off her own deportation until Shajida's high school graduation was denied. Still, the honor roll student tells me she plans on succeeding in school for her mother.
Sometimes when I try my best, and then, like, just to see her, like, feel so proud of me, it's, like, amazing.
Today, she's feeling that pride and hugging her mom extra tight. She doesn't know the next time they'll be together again.
And tonight's actually Sajida's junior prom, but instead of being there with her friends from school, she's going to be at the airport in New York, hugging her mom goodbye. Now, she is a U.S. citizen, Sajida is, so she and her brothers will stay here with family. In New Jersey, Miguel Martinez-Valle, NBC 10 News.
There you go, folks. Tell me ICE is not a terror organization. Honestly, like, what is the possible point of this?
I think the Steve Bannon endgame of it is to deport everyone who's not from America and then have have white people do low wage jobs.
But the problem is that there's not enough capacity to deport everyone. So really what the agenda is to create enough fear in this community that people leave. But as we are seeing right now, in the most dangerous way that you can attempt to get into this country, because half of the undocumented immigrants in this country are here on overstayed visas. The most dangerous possible way that you could enter into this country, we're seeing an increase in those people, because the reason why people come here is because of their situation in their home country. Or, you know, maybe they have kids here. God forbid.
They also recently made it an official policy, something ICE had been doing for a while, which is under the Obama administration, they would typically release pregnant women on parole. And now they're no longer doing that. They're keeping them in detention facilities, often in really horrible conditions.
Well, you don't know what they're going to do with the baby once the baby's the put it into a river and it'll go down and get the Pharaoh will pick it up.
Yeah, that baby could be president someday.
All right, folks, I'm going to head into the fun half. We'll lighten things up with Ted Nugent meeting Alex Jones. That's not a joke. That actually happened.
We got Passover on the brain still, I think.
Yeah, I definitely do. All right, just a reminder, this program relies on your membership. We cannot survive without you. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you're one of those people who want to get the fun half, but you don't have the finances, email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Then have a lot of patience. It'll take a while. We will get to you. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, TMBS. You can subscribe on iTunes right now, and then you don't have to remember to check it out on Tuesdays. But you could also check it out live on video at our YouTube channel. Do you know who the guest is?
Or anytime on video. Doug Lane from Zero Books, and then the great Gene Bajelon.
Gene is in studio.
Double in studio.
Oh, well, that's right. You're here.
Yeah, he's here.
Gene is with us sitting on the couch. Yeah.
Talking about the Kurdish stuff and the Jeremy Corbyn anti-Semitism stuff.
Ugh.
Among many other things.
And check out Jamie's Patreon at patreon.com/JamiePeck.
Yeah, I don't have any new blog posts up, unfortunately, but we do have a new episode of our podcast.
Oh, there you go.
That should be enjoyable for anyone who enjoys my blog. It's still in soft launch mode, but it's patreon.com/theantifada. And it's linked from my own Patreon blog as well.
So you can go to that central clearinghouse there. And also, I got one or two emails about the Ring of Fire interviews we did last week. Ring of Fire, we do on a weekly basis. It is I host it. It's a slightly different version than this show. We do shorter interviews. So with journalists on smaller topics that you may have missed throughout the week. So you can check that out. Go to find it on iTunes, Ring of Fire Radio. All right, folks, quick break. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920. We will take your... Oh, and also, I just want to remind you, you know, on Spotify, not only is the show available as a podcast on Spotify, you can listen on Spotify if you listen to a free podcast, but if you search for Majority Report, official and often updated. It's quite a name. Maybe we should put in an MR logo there, some type of... We can't do
I think
that.
Spotify makes them out of the first couple.
Oh, you can change the logo? Matt Leck has curated the Majority Report playlist. Now, there's like three different lists, but this is the Majority Report official and often updated one, as opposed to the Majority Report one, and somebody else had done one. But I don't even listen to any other music now. I just turn this thing on and that's it. Makes it much easier for me. That's what I like. I like one-stop shopping. That's the way I roll. I hope you put Galaxy 500 on this.
There's some Galaxy 500.
All right. There you go. All right. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it, you might throw.
Alpha males are back.